This is Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. This week, we continue our monthly series on issues related to aging. Creative arts can be therapeutic for many people, whether a person is the artist or the audience. And people 65 and older are no exception. Today, we're talking about the arts and aging, how music, theater, visual arts can be therapies for and expressions of aging. Joining us to talk about regional resources are Karen Misseldine, an art therapist from Decorah, Iowa, Adrian Sweeney, associate artistic director and resident ensemble member at the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota, and Andrea Halverson, a music therapist from Life in Harmony in La Crosse. And Karen, we'll start with you. You know, can you just talk a little bit about how visual arts are used as a therapy?
So there are lots of ways that art therapy is used. You can see art therapists in any place that all ages and all abilities are. Art is used as a way to, you know, tap into the creative side of the brain. It's often seen as something that you're kind of coming through the side door or the back door instead of just the verbal communication, so using that nonverbal. So some people really work in an art as therapy approach, so the art itself is the therapy where the process is really focused on. And then there's other people that use art as psychotherapy and also people that combine those two. Art therapy is what has been called kind of the love child of art and psychotherapy.
Yeah, and can you, you know, not only, kind of appreciating art or looking at pieces of art as therapy, but, you know, really focusing on making art as a therapy, you know, can you kind of explain to people who might not be familiar with the concept, you know, how art therapy is really different from an arts and crafts kind of project?
Thank you for, you know, making the difference in that. Yes. You know, I use pretty quality art supplies so people can feel like they have some mastery in what they're doing. And the difference is that there's no right or wrong when it comes to art therapy. I often come in with a theme or a focus that we want to look at, but people can take it in any direction that they want. And it's very much the person doing the art. With working with our older people, I'm really careful to make sure that I don't jump in to help them too quickly so that I can help them gain that sense of mastery and decrease that sense of helplessness. So they're doing it all. And it doesn't matter how it turns out. Sometimes we hang up the artwork, and sometimes the artwork is there for, you know, others to see. But most of the time, it's the process itself and the experience of putting that art material to the paper or making something with their hands, which then generate memories. It connects, you know, brain waves. It connects them to the creative side of themselves. It helps get them in touch with a more vital time in their lives and just experiencing that joy of using the art materials and trying something new. So it's not a cut and paste or a coloring. It's very much that person creating whatever's coming from them.
And Andrea, I know that this, this kind of confusion can also happen in music therapy, where people will, you know, kind of blur the lines between entertainment, music as entertainment, but also, you know, and music as therapy. Can you talk a little bit about the difference there?
Definitely, yes. I think a lot of the things that Karen are saying are resonating with me because they are some of the things that I encounter in my job as the music is really about the process, and maybe from the outside it looks like a jam session or it looks like we're just playing music and having a sing-along with the client or the patient and maybe the whole family if we have everyone involved. But the music is targeting real functional goals, which could be cognitive goals or physical goals or social emotional goals. So we are very diligent about documenting the progress that we're making and that we're making progress toward a functional goal. And maybe a client may be obtaining some kinds of musical skills along the way. But our focus is really on that functional goal and providing some kind of service that is going to promote some cognitive development or emotional development in the client that we're working with. So I think I see a lot of maybe music, just a CD maybe labeled as music therapy, but we try to be careful about that distinction of that, that music therapy is really working on some of those functional goals and not just maybe what it looks like from the outside. Is it can be a very fun time, and it is for the client and for the therapist, but we're working on functional things and targeting the goals of the client.
And Andrea, I know that you, you know, specifically work with, you know, senior populations with music therapy. You know, what kind of drew you to working with that population?
I've thought about that. I'm not exactly sure why I've maybe always felt a connection with older adults. I've always really enjoyed, even as a child, maybe visiting nursing homes. And when I've had family there, I've not only enjoyed visiting them, but just spending time with the other residents and being able to be a recipient of some of the knowledge that they share with me, or the stories, or some of the amazing things that I feel like I won't have an opportunity to experience this. But so many of the things that older adults give to me, I always wanted to be in a position that I could give something back to them, or I could just show them really how much they're valued in society, because I don't feel like people really value all that older adults have to offer. And it's just sometimes the way that our society is built in care for older adults isn't what I believe it should be.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're talking about how the creative arts can be a therapy and a celebration for seniors in the Cooley region. We're here with Andrea Halverson, a music therapist in La Crosse, Karen Misseldine, an art therapist in Iowa, and Adrian Sweeney from the Commonweal Theater in Minnesota. And Adrian, you have, you know, a little bit different perspective. You know, you work with the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, and I know that you guys are working on a new production that really focuses on aging. Tell me a little bit about Pride's Crossing.
Yes. This is a beautiful play by playwright Tina Howe. She won a number of awards for this play that was first staged in 1997. And it is actually very specifically based on her aunt, who lived this normal but wonderful life all the way through her 90s. The play is also inspired by Gertrude Ederle, who was the first female ever to swim across the English Channel. So there's a little bit of a dovetailing in there. The play actually takes place. It starts on the 90th birthday of my character that I play, and it flashes back and forth in time to when she's 10, to when she's 15, 25, 45, 60, 50. And it goes back and forth, and it really just charts her life and the decisions that she made, those that she's grateful for, those that she regrets. But mostly it focuses on Mabel as a 90-year-old. And what has been interesting to me is that the play absolutely explores how people are treated and viewed as they move through the age spectrum.
Mm-hmm. And as you said, you know, it features these flashbacks. You know, why do you think this process of kind of taking stock of your life as you grow older, you know, why do you think that can be, in a way, therapeutic for people as they age?
What I'm finding, that's a great question, because I'm in the second week of rehearsal, and that's a question I'm asking myself. Why does this character do this? Why does she flash back and forth in time? On a practical level, it's mostly there is such a wealth of memory, and everything that she picks up reminds her of something or someone else. And so I think for this character, and I think for a lot of us, you know, for good and for bad, the older we get, the more memories we have. The older we get, the more experiences we have. And we just are in a wonderful position to be able to recognize what we've learned from those experiences and allow those experiences and what we've learned to inform our future decisions. And so I think that that is the reason that the playwright has chosen to go in this direction. But I've been doing research, I guess, chatting with nonagenarians just about what their life experience has been. And absolutely, memory plays a huge part, but not in a way that is that drags them down, not in a way that, keeps them locked in to either sadness or happiness. Or for the most part, these people that I'm talking to are vibrant, intelligent, challenging, exceptional, and extraordinary people today as much as they were 50 years ago.
And Karen, you know, how much do you see kind of this process of reflecting back on a person's life, you know, when you're working with different clients in art therapy?
Yeah, definitely. That's a really big part of it. And I do a lot of group therapies. My goal there is to, you know, really, I work in the nursing home, so to really connect people in this new community that they haven't chosen. But so what I do, even yesterday, I brought out two colors of paper, a black and a dark blue, and I asked people to choose one and then asked them to, you know, I asked one of the women what she would call that dark blue, and she called it midnight blue. And then we got on a conversation about who's been up till midnight and in their past. And so there were lots of stories about dancing until midnight and past midnight. And there were two women that had been waitresses, and they talked about working as waitresses and coming home at 2 a.m., you know, after closing down the tavern or the restaurant. And so even just starting with a color like that and tapping into memories and connecting each of them together as a community and bringing back that time of more of a, you know, vital time when they were really active. And those memories are so sharp and always so interesting. And so, you know, that seems so simple, just starting with the color. But that happens, you know, as well with any kind of the art expressions that people do. Another favorite one that, you know, I use a lot of experiential types of directives, like starting with a peach. First I'll smell the peach and feel the peach and experience it completely and then taste it, and then we draw the peach. And then that, you know, brings up stories of if they picked peaches or canned peaches, made pies, and just really using that whole body experience and then drawing the peach. And then that drawing itself becomes a self-portrait of that person in the moment, but it's also full of all these memories that they had with that experience.
Yeah, and Andrea, you know, I think that many times people are exposed to music therapy by thinking about it as a way to work with individuals with dementia and helping, you know, use music from their past to kind of bring those memories back. You know, have you been able to have any of those experiences?
Yes, I think music can be so effective for accessing some of those memories because music is tied to memories in so many different ways. I think even from childhood of songs that older adults have heard from their mom singing to them, that can bring some of those really early memories back and some of the emotions tied to that all throughout adulthood into maybe songs that were used at this individual's wedding or songs that they sang to their own kids. So music and memory, I think, are tied so much, and so much in the brain as well, the way the brain is wired. So I think using, and especially in my experience, that I've used music as one of the biggest ways to target some of that recall of memory with the client. Or if the client isn't able to and it's in a hospice situation, sometimes it may be for the family to reminisce about that individual and sing those songs to their family member. So I think that's something that's not always thought about within music therapy, is if it's not just music with the individual, but music with the family to recall some of those emotions. And I think a lot of discussion recently has been with music and Alzheimer's disease and some of those diseases that really affect the memory and affect it aggressively and sometimes very quickly. So music is very non-threatening and a way to bring back some of those memories in a more comfortable way and a way that's enjoyable for the client too.
And I think that, you know, a lot of people feel that, you know, music is very universal, that, you know, regardless of the genre or type of music that, you know, everybody, you know, kind of has a music that they can relate to. I mean, have you also kind of have seen that, you know, everybody kind of has that song or that genre, regardless of their upbringing or, you know, their past?
Yes, I think something that I've noticed a lot with people that I worked with is there's maybe one song that even if dementia has been progressing for a long time and if I've been working with that individual for a while, and it's always a song that I can maybe count on, is I'm going to see that glimmer in their eye of that they're with me in that moment and they are they're present with me, even if they're really struggling with a lot of their other awareness. So something very important for music therapy is using the preferred music of the client too. So I definitely get to learn all kinds of different music and songs that I've never heard of before and artists that I didn't think I would ever sing before, but I've done it. And that is really a way to access that person and their memories and their emotions.
That's Andrea Halverson, a music therapist in La Crosse, here with us today to talk about regional creative art programs for seniors. Also joining our conversation is Adrian Sweeney from the Commonweal Theater in Minnesota and Kara Misseldine, an art therapist in Iowa. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Karen, you know, we've been talking about how the creative arts, you know, can really help seniors kind of reflect on their past and really think about that. But, you know, how does art therapy also kind of help seniors, you know, accept or even enjoy, you know, where they are at in the present, you know, what limitations they might have because of age or, you know, their situation?
That is a really great question. I think we especially see that in the nursing homes because they're at a point where there's a lot of grief and a lot of depression that is around, you know, losing their bodies and their bodies failing them. And I see a big goal in my job is to help them embrace where they are now and to see the beauty in their abilities as they can do it now. There's a lot of frustration at first and feeling like they can't do the art. Another part of my job is to adapt it so that they can feel some mastery and some success in what they're producing and what they're doing, but also in just kind of, you know, coming back to that place of, you know, embracing what they can do. And any visual mark that they can make is more visibility of themselves. And just continuing to, you know, using those art materials and pushing an art material on the piece of paper connects those brain waves to keep them more vital. There's, you know, often I have people who say that they don't want to come to art therapy because they can't do it. There's a woman I work with quite a bit who's very crippled from arthritis. Her hands are really turned in on themselves, and she has a lot of pain. But I can often talk her into coming in to join us. And as the group gets going, then I sit down with her and, you know, start something on the page for her and encourage her to move a big chunky chalk pastel on the paper within some kind of design, and then, you know, she can use her fingers or a tissue then to blend those colors and to, you know, it's just always beautiful to see her leave the group and be thankful for that experience and being there and happy with what she was able to produce, even though, you know, it's very small and very minimal, but she was able to be part of the group and to kind of rise above that depression and pain for that hour, hour and a half that she's there.
And, you know, Adrian, hearing Karen talk about, you know, people kind of, you know, using art as kind of an acceptance of where they are at in life. You know, I know that the Commonweal Theater, and through this production of Pride's Crossing, is hoping to kind of spark some community mm-hmm. conversations to maybe help with some of the storytelling and also kind of acceptance. Tell me a little bit about those community events.
Yes, this has been an outreach that I've been collaborating with the publisher of Rochester Women's Magazine. We met quite a while ago because I knew that this story would appeal to her readership in a broad way. And she became very interested, and she offers a column every issue on intergenerational families, especially intergenerational women, families of great-grandparents and great-grandmothers and grandmothers and granddaughters. And so we started talking about what we call, what we have called the wisdom workshops, by not in any way meaning we are imparting wisdom, because I have very little to impart, but as an opportunity to get people together to talk about their shared collective experiences and their shared collective wisdom, which as a group is so much more profound than anything any one of us individually can experience or come up with. So we've done one in the spring, and we have a series of these in the fall where we are meeting, we put questions, a series of topics, discussion topics out on the internet prior to the meeting. And then I come in, I do a monologue from the play, and then we break off into small discussion groups and discuss things like relationships, memories, regrets, things that we're grateful for. And I was so fortunate, the very first experience of this, to be in a small discussion group with an age range of women probably 10 years younger than me through the age of 85. And it was just very profound the way everyone felt able to candidly express their fears and frustrations, their joys and happinesses. And so it was just incredibly profound. And I what I found through that was, to Andrea's point, we as a society, we really fall short in the way we view and respect our elders, for lack of a better word. And what I'm finding in the course of this play is that, you know, I don't know what the arbitrary date is, but somewhere along the line, there's a line where people younger say, oh, you can't make your own decisions anymore, or you really don't know what's right for you. And what I'm finding through these workshops, through my outreach, through my research for this part, playing this part, is and almost how dare you quality. You know, if someone has lived to be 85, it's pretty, they probably know what they want to do. And even if it isn't the decision I would make or would like to see them make, finding a level of respect that comes out of just being on this planet for 75, 80, 85, 90 years is something that is a new awareness to me. And it's come out of these workshops, and it's been a real honor.
Andrea, I know that, you know, you also have looked at music as a way to kind of connect generations in a way similar that Adrian is talking about with these, you know, community conversations. You know, can you tell me a little bit about that work?
We actually have an opportunity coming up this fall to work with the Park and Rec program in La Crosse and do an intergenerational program with kids around the age of 5, 7 to 5, younger, and some of our older adults in the community, and bring them together and then do some of those songs that are some traditional songs that I really feel are getting forgotten, that that older adults know well, sung as kids, and some of our kids have sung as young kids as well, but they're kind of getting left out and some people are forgetting about them. So it's a neat opportunity that we have, I think, to facilitate some of those older adults teaching some of these songs to younger kids. So we'll be working with the Park and Rec program this fall to initiate some of that. And I'm really excited to be working with that. But the some other intergenerational things that I've had some experience working with is some choral work with older adults and some younger adults too. I think really mixing that together and having the opportunity for older adults to share some of their wisdom and for younger adults too and some kids just to benefit from some of that, as well as just to experience that intergenerational milieu, to be in that, have that opportunity, I think has just been really neat for everyone involved from more of like a community building standpoint. And from a music therapy standpoint, working with families has been a really neat intergenerational opportunity, or some of the older adults or some of the adults that are in hospice, that we can bring some of the family in for sessions, like I had mentioned before, and use the music as a way to communicate, as sometimes it is hard for those different groups intergenerationally to talk about or to communicate well. So we can do that through the music, and sometimes we find that they have similar musical tastes, so it's kind of a way to find similarities and to start conversations too.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, with the choral program, and also, you know, just having, you know, seniors kind of interact with very young children, you know, why, you mentioned, you know, that's important for the community. You know, why is it important to have that space where different generations are mixing?
I think, and that's just another thing that's maybe socially developed, is a lot of our society is kind of segregated into really young kids and then teenagers and maybe young adults, and then there's older adults too. And just kind of bringing our community together and learning from each other and having a tolerance for each other and being able to work together well is just something really neat to see. And a lot of younger kids maybe don't have an opportunity to see older adults or work with older adults, as maybe they don't have grandparents, or maybe they have a small family, or grandparents have passed away. And older adults also don't get an opportunity a lot of times to see young kids, and they get so much joy out of working with kids. And that's really neat to see too, just the benefit on both sides when you see those intergenerational groups working together.
Andrea Halverson, a music therapist from Life in Harmony in La Crosse, is here with us today to talk about regional resources for creative arts therapies and the eighth installment of our monthly series on aging. Also joining us is Karen Misseldine, an art therapist from Decorah, Iowa, and Adrian Sweeney, associate artistic director and ensemble member at Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Coming up, we'll continue our conversation on how the arts are sparking conversations and inspiring joy for people 65 and older. You're listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. To hear audio archives of today's show, visit our website, wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Hope Kerwin. Today we're continuing our monthly series on aging in Wisconsin and neighboring states. The creative arts, including music, theater, and visual mediums, are often an expression of the artist, but they also can inspire conversation among members of the audience. Several different organizations in the area are using art as both a therapy for and a celebration of aging. Joining us to talk about the arts and aging are Adrian Sweeney, associate artistic director and resident ensemble member at the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota. Andrea Halverson, a music therapist at Life in Harmony in La Crosse, and Karen Misseldine, an art therapist in Decorah, Iowa. Adrian, before the break, you know, we were talking about some of these community conversations that the Commonweal Theater is hoping to have in association with Pride's Crossing. You know, in what ways is theater a good, opportunity to kind of create a safe space to have some of these conversations and to prompt some of these conversations?
I think the thing that I've noticed over the years, I've been at the Commonweal now, this is my 16th season. Going to the theater is an experience, an artistic experience, very much unlike most others. You can sit at home and watch a beautiful movie on Netflix. You can go to the movie theater and see something beautiful. But when you come to the theater, you are seeing live people tell a story, and you're sitting with people who are all having that it's a unique experience that will never be repeated, and you're all sitting there together, whether it's an audience of 80 or 100 or 150, you're having this experience together that is almost a moment in time that's frozen. It will never happen again in the exact same way. And I think what I've noticed is it gives us the opportunity to start conversations. Everyone is going to have a different feeling about what they saw. Everyone is going to have a slightly different response. And so being at a theater or a concert or a dance performance and with a group and seeing it together then gives you the opportunity to have deeper conversations. Much like Andrea was saying about the music, a song can spur a memory up. A story that you see at the theater, a piece of theater can stir a memory. A line might hit you one way that it's going to hit your friend who's sitting next to you a totally different way. And yet you're sharing this time and place, and it allows then for conversation. And I have many, many people come back to the theater and say, oh, we talked all the way home about XYZ. And it can be a silly comedy. It can be something deep and dramatic. You know, whatever it is, it isn't the theme so much. It's the opportunity to sit together and share a story that in many ways is we just don't do as much anymore. At the Commonweal, we have one show that we offer free to the residents of the senior and nursing facilities in our region. And for those folks, we provide transportation, and it's a normal show. It's not a special show, or it's not a truncated show. And for them to get dressed up, put makeup on, get in the van, come to see the show, take part in intermission, and then sit there with all their friends, it doesn't happen that often. And then for us as performers, it's a gift to be able to share that. Same thing for this particular show. The topics that we are exploring, Mabel, the main character's aging, the frustrations and joys around that, I hope will spark conversation. We're going to be having post-show discussions and, like you said, the intergenerational workshops. So I'm hoping, I know that theater just on any given day can be a real community experience for people, and I'm hoping that this play is even more so.
And Karen, in thinking about art as a collective experience, but also a very personal experience, a very kind of inward experience, do you see that in your work in visual art therapy?
So is the connection between both of those? Yes, I do, very much. In the group therapy situations, I work at Northeast Iowa Behavioral Health as well, and also have a private practice where I do therapy groups with different themes. One of the biggest things that I talk about is, in our culture and society, we really believe that we shouldn't be copying each other or looking and seeing what other people are doing. But so that's something that I really focus on and try to break apart and talk about how we are not alone in this society and in this world that we really connect with each other. And when you see an element of your work and somebody else's work or vice versa, that even shows a deeper connection. And then you can even find more connections to, you know, other experiences that you've had in your life and that would connect with the other people in the group as well. So it is this internal inner self that is being expressed at the moment with the visual art, but also it really, there's a visual of how we are all connected and with the patterns, the lines, the colors. And when a group is working with each other for several times over and over, then you really do start to see a common thread between them. And it's a really beautiful way that people feel part of the community. There's several different art therapy experiences that I use that really do bring that together. Like we've done murals that are made by panels that there's 16 panels, they're each 12 by 12, and those panels slide into a frame and then make up one mural. And so as they're working on each person may not be happy with what they're doing at the moment, but when they put it up together and it makes the whole mural, they back up and they're always in awe about how they were part of this piece that everybody can enjoy together and other people can enjoy it. Just even an effect working in a loss and grief group that I'm doing, I had people do a response mandala to some other art that we were doing in a guided imagery, and they used chalk pastels or whatever, and they just put down their feelings and however they were feeling. And I have a mix of ages in there, and there's one woman who's, I think, in her 70s and, you know, dealing with the aging process. But one of the things that was just beautiful, I often then have people tape their art up to the wall, on the wall, so they can see it all together. And one person in the group was just kind of, she melted and just had a big aha, I'm not alone in all of this. She saw that how her piece fit with everybody else's, and it felt good to be surrounded by the visual work. So it's that real deep connection of that inner and that community.
Absolutely. And, you know, Karen, you mentioned that you've done work in nursing homes or other, you know, assisted living facilities, and you have a private practice. You know, how do people kind of, you know, come to you? Why, you know, what are the usual reasons that you see people seeking out art therapy?
That's a really good question. And at Northeast Iowa Behavioral Health, it's a mental health clinic, and so I get anybody who they put on my schedule, and when I let them know I'm an art therapist, and I'm a licensed mental health counselor, but I've been an art therapist even longer, and most people kind of open their eyes and say, wow, oh my goodness, that's great, you know, and they want to connect on that level as well. Some people aren't really sure what it is, but they're willing to try. So it happens in that way. And in the nursing homes, I'll go around to the rooms and invite people to come, and often they'll say, I'm no artist. And I say, that's perfect. You're exactly the person who is supposed to come and join me if you're up for it. And so, because you don't have to be an artist that has no art skills, and often that's even a person who is more ripe for using this creative expression. Through my private practice, people are, you know, coming to me because of the art therapy and wanting to tap into that creative side to express whatever challenges, whatever emotional issues, mental health issues that they're dealing with. It's a growing field. It's a field that's been there, that's been out for, you know, quite a number of years, but it's still really, people don't really understand what it is. And you don't need to be an artist. You don't have to have any art skills whatsoever to be able to get the benefits of using a creative approach.
That's Karen Misseldine, an art therapist in Iowa, here with us today to talk about regional creative art programs for seniors. Also joining our conversation is Andrea Halverson, a music therapist in La Crosse, and Adrian Sweeney from the Commonweal Theater in Minnesota. You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. And Andrea, I would pose a similar question to you. You know, how do people kind of make their way to music therapy? How do they get involved?
Well, we have a number of different, I think, needs that clients have coming to us. A lot are anxious or very uncomfortable or experiencing a lot of pain, and music can be a good distraction from some of that or a way to work through some of those emotions. And a lot of the referrals that I would get would be some people who are just having trouble sleeping, too, as music therapy has a principle called the ISO principle, where we can we meet the client where they're at. So maybe matching their breath, and maybe I would just improvise music that would match with that or some of the client's preferred music. And then we can gradually slow the music until the respiration rate will come down with that. Or if a client is maybe struggling to wake up, we can kind of do a similar thing and meet them where they're at and help them to kind of start their day and get through their routine, and using some of the music maybe to remember parts of their routine within the lyrics of the music. So we see a lot of different reasons that clients will come to music therapy, and usually I think one of the requirements is that clients like music and enjoy music, and I definitely hear similar concerns that I'm not a musician or I'm not a good singer, I don't know how to play any instruments, but I might not have the client play any instruments in the session. We might use percussion instruments. If the client is able to and wanting to play instruments, I have many different drums and different instruments that really no matter what you play, it's going to be a pleasing sound too. And sometimes it's just singing along, or the client doesn't even have to sing. They can just let me do that part, and then we will process it together afterwards, or do a discussion of the lyrics, or maybe just the sound of the music. So it's really kind of interesting, maybe some of the problems that might come to me, and then we kind of figure out a plan to address them with the music after that.
Right, because it sounds like, you know, there are definitely real life applications, you know, at work here.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah, lots of different things that we are creative with how to use music to address them. And so there are so many people who are appropriate for music therapy, and some people might have that hesitation of that they're not musicians, but they're definitely welcome to make music, but they don't always have to actively be making music to participate too.
Mm-hmm. And Karen, you know, do you have a similar experience of kind of having, you know, these kind of real life applications, whether it's, you know, kind of relieving pain, chronic pain that a person might have, or other situations that, you know, art therapy can really address?
Definitely. In the nursing homes, you know, there is a lot of pain, a lot of discomfort, and you know, I have gotten to a point, I've been doing this for 16 years. There was a point there I was at four different nursing homes, and I'm there for full days. But just having people come and being, well, what I was getting to is that my groups at one point would just last an hour. And now I have gotten to the place that sometimes we are going for almost 2 hours. And I will have people in my groups that will have been complaining about pain or having some behavioral response that is related to the pain, related to grief or depression, but often related to pain. And with dementia, a lot of people, when there's pain, they act it out in other ways that are disruptive or ways that they wouldn't normally act. And often I can get people just to be involved in the group and to be making things and interacting with people in the group and be sitting there from an hour to 2 hours and not say anything about being in pain the whole time that they're there. And, or yeah, so things like that. And I think that that's just an amazing gift that the art experience can give people. And there's that theory called flow out there, which is it's active relaxation. So when people can get into that, and there's also, you know, the ideas of mindfulness. So being able to be really in the moment, being focused, having joy, laughter, and connection to, you know, to rise above and alleviate that pain is just a beautiful thing that happens.
And Adrian, you know, do you think that theater can also be a way to kind of, you know, escape things, whether it, you know, is a physical thing, pain, or a mental or emotional pain that people might be able to escape when enjoying theater?
It's very interesting that you say that, because exactly what Karen just said, it's that opportunity to be mindful for 2 hours and to be present with something else that is not your pain, whether it's grief or actual physical pain, emotional pain. I believe, and I again feel strongly that it's also that sitting in a theater, being surrounded by other people, you're all experiencing the same thing, and that energy is palpable. It's very palpable. So to sit there for 2 hours and experience a story, whether it's a silly comedy or something deep and in depth and dramatic, you're sitting there and you're focusing and you are mindful. It is a mindfulness practice. And it certainly is for us on the stage as well. You know, we are very mindful in the moment. And then you're sharing that experience. And I truly believe that it's an opportunity to rise above, go away from, detach from the cares and the woes, whether they be mental, physical, spiritual, or otherwise. And I've actually had people say that. We've had patrons. I'm very fortunate to be part of a theater company that gets to know its patrons very, very well. I've had people tell us many times, you know, they're grieving over the loss of their spouse, and they're just thrilled to be back to the theater, and it's lifted their spirits. And yes, I'm sure the topic of the play may be a part of it, but I also think it's that focused communal energy and that being in the moment that is a bigger part of it.
You know, we've been talking a lot about how art therapy can kind of help with, you know, seniors who have developed conditions as they get older or different pains. But, you know, Andrea, I know that you've talked before that, you know, music therapy can also, you know, be for well seniors who don't maybe have health conditions and, you know, is more of the celebration side of things. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Sure. I think some of the intergenerational things that we've talked about are great opportunities for well older adults to participate in. And just creating opportunities like that, like a choral experience or maybe a drum circle or some kind of percussion group for us to use some of those musical ways to access well older adults and just maintain some of those skills that those adults have, like using music for movement to maintain physical goals, or maybe building some of those social connections and having the opportunity to do that so they have those social connections as they age and they have that support and ability to cope with some of the changes they might be going through. And any opportunity, I think, to engage well older adults and set them up with some of the tools that they will have for coping and maintaining some of the skills that they have for as long as possible, I think are all great opportunities that I try to seek out and we're kind of looking for in our community to be able to provide that service and provide opportunities for older adults while they're doing well and before they get to that point where they really need to start trying gaining back skills, because that can be really difficult. So if we can maintain, that's definitely something we look for.
We've been talking with Andrea Halverson, a music therapist from Life in Harmony in La Crosse, Karen Misseldine, an art therapist from Decorah, Iowa, and Adrian Sweeney, Associate Artistic Director and Resident Ensemble Member at the Commonweal Theater in Lanesboro, Minnesota, about the arts and aging, how music, theater, and visual arts can be a therapy for seniors and spark conversation about aging in our communities. Today's show is the 8th in our monthly series on issues related to aging. Every month, we hope to explore a new topic related to the growing population of people 65 and older in our area. In September, during the next show in our series, we'll talk about how seniors can plan financially for the future. And that's Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Hope Kerwin. The executive producer for Newsmakers is John Gatto, and John Davis is our senior news editor and producer. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. You'll also find links to some of the resources we talked about today. Our site also has archives of other past editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make suggestions for future shows, you'll find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers.